We now continue with our series from producer Julian Crandall-Hollick, which explores an often ignored sector of society in India, the pavement dwellers of Apna Street. Pavement dwellers may be officially homeless, but as we've heard in past reports, they are not beggars, nor are they on welfare. There is no state welfare in India. Most of them work, some occasionally, many full-time. In and around the Khatau mills, there are probably enough small businesses to fill a phone directory. Although these businesses offer the kinds of goods and services we take for granted in this country, they keep a sophisticated urban economy functioning smoothly. Julian calls this installment Water Street, USA.
The fish lady wants 40 rupees a kilo for fresh halva. Sakina can't afford that. She wants it at 25 rupees a kilo. Halva's delicious. It's a type of pomfret, a flaky fish found in the Arabian Sea. White on the inside, black on the outside. Sakin has invited me and Kamal for lunch in a hut on Water Street. She knows I prefer fish to meat, so she's stretching her budget to be the gracious host. Just one fish. No one else eats it in our house. 25 rupees a kilo? Okay, mother, I'll tell you what. For 250 grams, 6 rupees. We'll split the difference. You want it sliced thin? You want me to scale it? The fish lady hands the halva to her assistant, squatting behind her on the pavement. He cuts the fish, then deftly scales it, wiping the scales onto the roadway. Here, take mother. He plops the halva into Sakina's plastic shopping bag. On the other corner, tomato, banana, and onion wallahs are lustily shouting their wares and their prices. Bananas, 5 rupees a kilo. Tomatoes, 3 rupees a pound. This isn't the regular market. That's over the other side of Jula Maidan. This one sprang up in the wake of the 1993 riots. The official market's run by Hindus, but they started acting petty towards the Muslims. They'd serve the best fruit and meat to their Hindu customers, or they'd pretend not to see the Muslims even when they were first in line. So some enterprising Muslim sellers migrated 100 yards to the corner of Jula Maidan and Maulana Azad Road. And because the area is overwhelmingly Muslim, they've been doing a roaring trade. The official market's half empty these days. At the top end of Apna Street, the official business days are just getting underway. The Aziz broiler farm shops stocking up on a couple of hundred squawking hens that'll be lucky to make it past midday. The halal butchers setting out choice cuts of mutton and beef. Further down, men are welding and old cooking oil tins are being unloaded to be flattened into flat piles of scrap for recycling somewhere else in the city. We turn left onto Water Street. Kamal hasn't been here for years. Sakina fills her in with who lives where. Remat's at the bottom of Apna Jopad Bati. Banu lives on the corner of Water Street, and there's Mustari. Sakina's hut's halfway down Water Street, built against the Khatau mills. It's an unusual hut. You enter through a curtain into, well, the only thing that springs to mind is an antechamber, a small separate space which doubles as a private bathroom. There's a small mirror hanging from a bamboo pole, and in the middle of the pavement, a large plastic bucket with an old plastic lavatory seat on top. There's something incredibly dignified about this little setup. Sakina, hobbled by a badly set ankle, deserted by her husband, a life more of sadness than joy, performs her toilette in a style and grace that would not be out of place in a French chateau. Inside the main room, Sakina's eldest daughter, Gaussia, is finishing some sewing. Sakina tells her to get the meal on. Roll out the dough for the rotis and put the rice to boil.
What?
What? You said something wrong?
She's cooking fish just for you, she said.
Oh, God. Okay.
Means you'll have to eat it.
Camels landed me in it. She suddenly decided that she's not hungry and she doesn't want anything to drink. I'll have to eat for the both of us. Sakina primes the stove to heat water for the rice, warns Camel to make sure her palu, that's the corner of the sari that hangs over the shoulder, doesn't get too near the flames. Gaussia washes the halva. Sakina says if you wash fish with salt, that takes away the smell. And do the tomatoes and spuds separately. And what spices should we use today? And before you know it, Sakina and Kamal are exchanging recipes for biryani.
Halva is a black pomfret?
Yeah. What do you eat in Mahesh and all?
Mahesh is that's what I eat, a black pomfret. But it's white flesh.
Flesh is white, the outside is not as white as pomfret, it's black, grayish, blackish.
Gaussia says it's a pain to have to grind all the spices up each time. So they keep a jar of masala mix, 1 kilo each of salt, garlic and ginger. Gaussia looks at her watch. Time to go over the road to the school. You want to come and see?
Oh, this is your school. Lots of kids.
Bang opposite, two small brick rooms brightly painted. Two teachers, Razia and Saida. 12 girls, 10 boys, toddlers, 3 and 4 years old, in little red and white check uniforms. For the past 10 years, Sakina and Gaussia have been coming over here every morning to feed snacks, wipe bottoms, wash sticky fingers, and generally help out. It's a strange mixture of Islamic prayers, ABCs, and numbers 1 through 10 to English nursery rhymes that went out long before even I went to kindergarten. I also have a suspicion there's something culturally incorrect about some of this stuff. And it's no better over with the boys. Still, putting sociological theories aside, I suppose if that's the way you learn English and it works, then let it be. And then Sakina sings them all a song, asking God to watch over the children, who in turn must pay proper respect to their parents. Some of the boys start to fidget. Razia and Saida, the two teachers, bring them smartly back into line. On Water Street, this is how a culture stays alive, how it's passed down the generations. This is how Sakina once learnt the tunes that she adapts for her own songs all those years ago back in Hyderabad. But now it's back across the road to continue preparing lunch. The peeling knife's blunt. Sakina sharpens it on a whetstone. Salad is cut. Salad is rinsed. Tomatoes, potatoes, diced. Put some more curry leaves in with it. You can leave it cooking another half hour at least. We've got time to do some sewing. We all leave together. I've got to see someone up the top of Water Street. I promise to come back in 15 minutes. When we return, Sakina and Gausi are sitting on top of a wooden shelf outside their hut, but protected from rain and sun by an extension of the roof, a sort of parlor from which they can work and watch the world go by.
What are you doing here, Sakina?
Sakina's snipping off stray threads around the buttonholes on some brightly colored cotton blouses.
These are delivered every day to you?
Every day these pieces are delivered to us, but sometimes if they don't get a chance to come here, then we go and get it.
Sakina says they usually manage about 50 blouses a day between the two of them. On a good day, maybe 100. Pay is just 7 rupees 50 paisa for 50 blouses, the price of the fish we're about to eat.
What's the label on that one say?
Pier 1 import New York. Made in India. 100% cotton. There are washing instructions on the label.
Said I'd surprise you, didn't I? And I've seen Sakina sewing on all sorts of labels. Bloomingdale's, Lord & Taylor, Saks Fifth Avenue. For this is where the final finishing work, the quality control, is done.
How much do you think that sells for in the United States? Just make a guess.
Sakina knows this is a trick question, but she'll probably get it wrong whatever she says. So first, she makes the disclaimer.
I cannot guess because I've never been to America. I have no idea what you think.
I press her again.
I think it could be sold for 100, 150 rupees in America.
Probably costs about 10 times as much, about 1,000 to 1,500 rupees.
Yeah.
Maybe Sakina should demand a raise.
I know we can do it one day if we are together, but in this community we are not together. If I say no, I will not work for this low wage, there are 20 other women who will go and grab the work and bring it home. So we have no other choice.
The halva is eventually eaten and pronounced delicious, even though I'm the only one eating it. As I walk back up to Jula Maidan, the fishwallas and the budgiewallas are still at it. But I'm thinking how unfair the other sort of marketplace can be. Now, all of us like to see prices stay down, but if we knew the reason why, maybe we wouldn't be quite so happy. Sakina has no leverage. There are millions more women looking for work, at any price or any wage. If Sakina pushes for a living wage, then the manufacturer will simply sack her. By the end of that day, he'll have found 100 women to take her place, maybe for even less money. This is Julian Crandall-Hollick reporting.
Next week, Julian remembers a woman named Moni. You're listening to Weekend Edition.